Welcome to Mindset Transformations with Coach Myrna, a show that showcases content and how to change your brain to change your life. A show empowering women who have been abused, betrayed, abandoned, or rejected to change how they feel about themselves and become co-creative sources, attracting abundant love and happiness into their lives. I'm Coach Myrna Young. I'm a certified professional coach, author of 3 books, motivational speaker, and of course, your host. I know from personal experience that change is hard. In my book, Out of the Snares, A Story of Hope and Encouragement, I share my journey of poverty and child abuse, betrayal and disappointment, and how I turned that all around to live an abundant life. This show is going to give you the tools to do the same in your life. And today we have an exceptional guest. Adam Lowry is a mental health counselor, trainer, certified life coach, certified in health nutrition. He's a speaker, he's a podcaster, he's an activist, and host of ESPN 580 Orlando's Fit Radio Show. Welcome, Adam, to our show. I am so excited to have you speaking and imparting your knowledge today. Welcome.
Well, I thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
You're welcome. All right, let's tell you a bit about Adam. Adam has quite a story. By training, he is a mental health counselor, a mental trainer, and transition specialist. In his heart, he's a father, husband, friend, author, and activist. In his spirit, he is a teacher, protector, whose passion, helping others challenge themselves to cultivate their authentic self and live an enthusiastic life. Through a violent childhood, Adam focused on his dream to play professional football, but a college injury ended his NFL dreams. Depressed and angry, he chose a life of crime that quickly entwined with addiction, violence, and much regret. Barely surviving the life, he transitioned to nightclub business and saw quick success. But addiction followed, and the void remained masked by money and the scene. After one random night of life and self-contemplation, he gave it all up, gave away what he no longer needed, left behind everything, and embarked on his walkabout, his spiritual rampage. For 2 years, he wandered from the Florida Keys to Tennessee, even a First Nation reservation in New Mexico. Adam returned home on a mission to change self and to help others. Within 3 years, he became a mental health counselor. Adam would go on to found Transrational Structural Behavior Theory, TSBT, published The Cognitive Rampage, A Dose of Authentic Revelation, as the application of TSBT. He launched a now charted podcast and will soon be releasing his first documentary film called Chemical Incarceration. This film is based on his second book called Chemical Incarceration, Addicted to the Process, which details the addictive design of the treatment industrial complex. He's currently co-authoring with performance expert Dr. Bobby Hoffman a revision of his numerous cited book, Motivation for Learning and Performance. Adam is presently writing his third book, titled Adam Chooses, and it's the title is, you know, the title is, anyway, what is am I saying? His third book, and Adam chooses to be private about that title for now. Sorry about that. He cognitively rampages from and on various media platforms and all things mental health, mental training, preventative versus reactive mental health, addiction treatment, chemical incarceration, life transitions, motivation and performance, as well as new uncontroversial mental health treatments, social issues connected to mental health, and sports-related mental health and training. Adam is quite transparent about his life experiences. He is the founder and director of the Full Synergy Group, LLC, a dynamic wellness group changing the way you take care of you. Wow, Adam, that is such an amazing biography. You have definitely used your life experiences to gain knowledge into addiction and chemical incarceration, and it's a wonderful thing that you are trying to help others with your knowledge. So, again, as I said earlier, I look forward to talking to you and learning as much as our audience about your specialty today. Welcome.
Well, I, for one, that's me. A little taken back. Never really had that read to me before. And
Oh, really?
My sister-in-law, who is a professional writer and journalist, wrote that. And I want to reach out and give her a big hug and kiss now.
Well, wow. It's great, and it's truth. So, I mean, you have, it looks like you're spending your life, you know, with this subject, mental health and chemical incarceration. So she just wrote it beautifully. So that's good.
Yeah, you could say I probably spent it on both ends, on this side of mental health and addiction on this side, but also on the other side of unhealthy mental health and addiction as well. So, you know, you're right to say that it's been in my life most of my entire life.
Yeah, you've lived it, so you can talk about it. Awesome. So let's dive right into it. I'm sure our audience is very interesting to learn from you today. So my first question is, you know, general, what is addiction and how is it diagnosed today?
Well, addiction is a broad topic and a broad definition in many aspects, and it has many definitions. But for the psychology of definition, it essentially has two components, and that's tolerance and dependence. And it focuses a lot on the physiology, essentially, not a whole lot of the environmental influences, et cetera. So when we talk about addiction and how it's diagnosed today, it's looked at as far as dependence and tolerance is. Does it affect also your biopsychosocial is what they say. Usually they perform a biopsychosocial assessment on you, which basically means is it disrupting your biological, your psychological, and your social? If it's disrupting all three of those with a high end of dependency, we can begin to classify this, if you will, as a diagnosis of addiction, which really we diagnose as substance dependence intolerance.
Okay. All right. So now, again, I'm learning something right off the top here because I was under the impression, of course, I've never studied this or not to become an expert, you know, general information, that addictive behavior is anything that you feel the need. It's a compulsion, a compulsive act. But what I'm hearing you saying that really the term addiction doesn't come into play unless it disrupts three areas of your life. So,
correct.
Is that
and
what
that's,
I'm hearing?
That's what you're hearing from a psychological diagnosis standpoint. And from a general idea, I definitely attack that idea that addiction manifests in many ways, and in work even, and relationships, and even in over-gymming, fitness, over-healthy, right? We can become addicted even to self-sabotage. People enjoy self-sabotaging, but they enjoy being the king of their own lives. It's why we toil in decisions as well. So we grasp on to the things that cause toil and drama because they become part of who we are. And we can even become addicted to our problems, our story. We become addicted to that narrative.
That is very true. That is very true. And I'm pretty sure we know some people that like to talk about, you know, their problems because they like getting the sympathy. Awesome. All right. So we are, you know, we're getting deeper here because everybody would think is, yeah, addiction is something you drink, is something you smoke, something you
right.
eat. But we can go deeper into all facets of addiction. Awesome.
Well, I even argue that depression and anxiety can become addictions.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How do you figure?
Well, remember, we're based in reward system species. So if we acquire a reward of some kind, be that negative or positive, it's still a maze and a route in the maze to the cheese. So if we then cannot get reward positively, we also seek reward or attention in other ways. And so depression can become a state, which is a state. We are affected by depression. We are not depressed. I get upset when I hear people say I am depressed, because we do not say that I am headache. We say that I have a headache, but we mm-hmm. switch it.
Right?
We don't say
mm-hmm.
I am cancer. We have cancer. But instead we mm-hmm. choose to become depression. We choose to become the narrative. And if we become the narrative, we set the state. Well, this too can be rewarding, because we get sympathy. We get a story to tell. We get choices that we have to worry about. This
yeah.
can bring self-importance.
Yeah. That's very true. I mean, I don't know a lot of adults that do this, but I knew, though, that children that have serious psychological issues want attention, and they, regardless if it's negative or positive, they like that attention anyway, and that's where the bad behaviors come from. So.
Yeah, well, it switches as we get older, too, because the attention then turns to love and acceptance. Because as humans, unless we have a deep personality disorder, that we all pretty much desire to be loved and accepted.
Yep.
And so the attention then turns to that as we get older.
Mm. Okay. All right. That's awesome. Okay, now, how is drugs associated with addiction?
Well,
and why is that a bad word?
Yeah, I'm going to pull directly from, if you ask me, the grandfather of all new knowledge in drug research, and that would be Dr. Carl Hart. And Dr. Carl Hart talks about drugs as being a bad word, because we have, A, this war on drugs. We have this idea back in the 80s and 90s of say no to drugs, and this idea that we think we can live in a drug-free society. Well, if we attach an irrational destination as a country to get to, it's no wonder why we can never end the war on drugs or live in a drug-free society, because never once in human creation have we ever lived in a drug-free society, because that means you have to put down your aspirin, your Tylenol, your caffeine, that means your coffee, and every other drug that you consider. So to state that, you know, drugs are bad, it's like saying I like sports. Well, do you like curling, ping pong, or rugby?
Okay. Right.
So when we reference the idea of
drugs. Too general a topic. Okay, got you. Well, you know, I've heard that in another way, not having anything to do with the addiction process, but having to do with anything that you declare war on increases in strength. So,
yes.
I mean, we can drive off in another topic here, but what you're saying is, essentially what you're saying is drugs is not a bad word. The drugs is part of who we are. Is that the narrative you're saying here now?
That's exactly what I'm saying, because I will tell you that if whoever has kids out there, or nieces, nephews, and have seen them, or if you're the uncle, what does the 4-year-old or 6-year-old do once you throw them up in the air or spin them around?
They laugh.
Do it again. Do it again. Do it again. Right? Until uncles and daddy's shoulders are dying. You're tossing this little one in the air. You're spinning around in circles. You're swimming in the pool, right? Do it again, do it again, do it again. Well, we've all seen the child in the middle of the room randomly spin in circles for no reason until they fall over.
Right, because they like
well,
it, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. What we're talking about, really, why the addiction drugs, this links to what I call basic human mood modulation. And so children have modulated their mood. We have all modulated our mood since the beginning. I mean, look at kids. Kids learn how to walk. They crawl their whole lives until they start to learn to walk, and they stand up and fall. They stand up and fall for what? Because a 1 foot different of perception? They were persevering before they knew what perseverance was.
Right.
All for what? They wanted to modulate their mood to see the world differently.
Right.
And move in it in a different way.
Okay, so you think you're saying that, or Dr. Carl Hart says that drugs somehow is associated with that behavior?
Well, the idea that we have gave this idea of drugs and those that use drugs this terrible, villainous, bad name, and this idea that drugs are this terror that we have to worry about, when it's not. It's not built up the way it's been sold. I mean, Dr. Carl Hart is also quoted as saying, we have to be real here, that what people understand as drug addicts, which is another terrible word, is that's 15% of the people that use daily. The other 85%, give or take, they're you and me. They go to work, to professionals, they have kids. They just do it differently. It doesn't affect them completely. And so we demonize all of this, including people, all of that, to this idea that drugs are bad, people that do drugs are bad and villainous. And really, it's been a part of who we are since we've been birthed.
Okay. All right. So is it always a traumatic experience for drug addicts when they're on drugs, or, you know, how else can a drug addict become a drug addict?
Sure. Well, that's a big hot debate, right, is this idea that everyone that suffers from addiction has dealt with a trauma. Well, I'm going to have to back that up a little more philosophical and go, well, you point a human out to me on this planet that hasn't faced a trauma. Because
true.
Trauma becomes relative. Trauma becomes perception. I like to say that ghetto is in the mind frame, that no one's action, mm-hmm. no one is worse, less than them. So someone starving in another country, their life isn't necessarily worse than someone dealing with depression in Beverly Hills, because the mind frame is the ghetto. So to point out a difference of the, so to say that a trauma has to happen or generally has occurred, you could say it generally occurs, sure. But couldn't we argue that every human being faces a trauma once in their life at some kind?
Okay.
Why wouldn't we all be addicts?
Okay. All right. So, So since everyone faces trauma in their lives, what makes, now I'm not sure if this is your specialty, but that I'm just curious on this answer. What makes the 15% take the hard drugs? I mean, you mentioned things like aspirin and you know, whatever, but I mean, we're really talking now here about, you know, crack and heroin and the bad drugs. What makes the 15% use those drugs to help with your traumatic experience?
Sure. Well, first, I wouldn't call them bad drugs. They are the ones that definitely have the bad name.
Right.
I can tell you that many parents that are putting Adderall down their children's mouths, essentially giving off one molecule, it is the exact same molecule makeup given off one as methamphetamine.
Yeah, I've heard Adderall is bad.
Right.
Okay.
So right, but this is true. So when mm-hmm. we call them bad drugs, heroin is a derived natural drug from a poppy. I mean,
right.
it can be very natural and actually has some positive things that it can do for you. I mean, so we can find positivities in everything. So, you know, that's
right.
again where we say the bad drugs are the good drugs, is
okay.
the ones that people struggle with mainly to control. And it's a great question that you asked that. About the, I think it was the addictive part you were connecting, is the
right, yeah, the 15%
the trauma.
That goes to the 15% of people that experience trauma in their lives chose that route.
Right. Well, if we look at where, I'm not going to answer the question because it's I'm going to try to sidestep the idea of calling brain addiction or addiction as a brain disease, because that's debatable, depends on, I don't necessarily agree with it.
Okay.
So
right.
what we have found, and, you know, Dr. Andrew Hill, actually, from Alternatives Addiction Treatment over in Los Angeles and Peak Brain Institute, does great imaging. And there's new evidence, and there's some evidence coming out. We all have opiate receptors in the brain. Well,
mm-hmm.
those opiate receptors, that small 15%, what we're finding is what we're classifying as having a brain disease. Let's just say you have a beer, and I have a beer, or someone else does. Well, that beer is going to affect all of our brains differently. Remember, our brain imaging and mapping doesn't mean a whole lot because it's so variant. There's a very famous picture of showing one brain not on meth and one brain on methamphetamine. Well, it's blue with some highlighted yellow areas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this means nothing. It totally means nothing because all of our brains are at different synapses at different times, and it's always changing. So pointing out variations in the brain doesn't mean nothing as the effect as a brain disease on drugs. And the brain can always heal. It can always repair itself. So the brain is not in that state.
Okay.
So to link it to the trauma, the brain, they are finding that this opiate receptor actually becomes more rewarded. So what a beer means to you or me or that 15%, it's more rewarding.
Okay.
So they chase that reward. It feels them and fits them better. So that's the brain's involvement as far as we're getting now.
True. I actually have heard that, you know, for instance, with the crack drug, which is a drug that I have actually, you know, researched, in that some people can be addictive by just one, you know, smoke. And, of course, you know, if you do it long enough, you will become, but they're chasing that reward system. So that's awesome.
Right.
All right. Well, you know,
and
we started off,
a,
you know.
That's definitely
ahead.
A myth too, Myrna. That's definitely a myth that you can shoot heroin once or smoke crack once and you're done for life. That's a huge myth that Dr. Carl Hart, myself, and others are trying to take on to end that stigma edge, because it's not so. And
oh.
I mean, Myrna, we tried to teach sex abstinence in high school, and look how good that worked.
That's true. Right. So, okay, so your research has said that, okay, you know, let's stop here for a minute or put a pin here for a minute. So what you're saying is that the popular consensus that that you can become that you can become a crack addict after one time because of the receptors in your brain liking it so much that it wants it more and more again. You're saying that that is a myth?
That is definitely true. That speaks to the 15% that I was talking about.
Okay, all right. Well, that's basically what I was saying. Okay, all right.
But this also can happen with the person you meet that you fall in love with, and these receptors are fed by emotional connections and later, right? Maybe work is fulfilling things with your bank account, and these same receptors begin to fire off.
Yes, very, very, very true. Okay, all right. Well, let's take a quick station break. And we will be right back. Welcome back. We are speaking today with Adam Lowry, a mental health counselor, trainer, coach. And as we have been talking in the first segment, very knowledgeable on addictive behavior and the consequences of drugs and trauma in our lives. So we start out our show getting very deep into processes and on results. What I want to do now is just talk to Andrew about his personal involvement and how, how he can give us a relative experience about what we were talking about in the first segment regarding, the brain receptors and addictions and things like that. So, Andrew, talk to us about addictive behaviors. What you think would be relevant in our conversation today?
Adam Lowry.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
Andrew popped out a few times.
I'm sorry, Adam. Right.
No, it happens.
Okay.
It's always Andrew, too. It's odd. It's always Andrew.
Okay.
Addictive behavior is a lot of what we've been talking about, things that are rewarding to us in a way. And it's hard sometimes to look at ourselves as simple rats in mazes. And, I speak to human behavior that a lot of reasons why people have difficulty making decisions is because they allow the emotion, the toil to set in of back and forth, and they avoid the truth because, unfortunately, as humans, we tend to make decisions on the path of least resistance and the path of most immediate reward.
True.
That used to be a survival mechanism for us. We had to do that to survive certain ways and certain things, and we do that. And, what we do better than any other animal that walks on this planet is decipher patterns. We decipher patterns. We pull patterns. We can see patterns. We build them called roads and communities. Right, these are all patterns that we lay out, and we can decipher those. Well, what we can also do is make up patterns that aren't there. Look for signs, if you will, right? We look for things that aren't there, and we can connect things as in this hunt for patterns. And so when we talk about addictive behaviors, these are patterns of behaviors that will repeat based on where the cheese is or where the fear isn't.
Okay. All right. So that is very true because, a lot of times when you self-medicate with any kind of behavior is because you're doing that to feel good, and that usually is because, you're fearing something or, you have an emotional, something that's in you. So how does your experience help you in this discussion? Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I'm transparent about my, I usually refer to it as my Scorsese lifestyle.
Okay. I saw that. I didn't know what that meant, so I didn't even bother saying that word.
Yeah, that's a film director known for doing films like The Departed, gangster kind of
okay.
films, if you will.
Yes, I have heard of him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I lived quite the Scorsese life, and I like to say that my life's been edited by a Stoic philosopher.
Okay, all right.
So, you know, I was raised in a violent home. It was abusive in my home. When I heard your opening going on here about women specifically and trauma, that speaks to my experience very deeply.
What?
And
what?
My mother was abused for 26 years. And physically, emotionally, financially, you just name it. And she's a warrior, and she got out of it 10 years ago, you know, and it's just really thrived and blossomed. And, you know,
that's awesome. And that's what this is about, showing that, yeah, you can thrive and blossom and have abundance. Okay, it's awesome.
Yeah, so I witnessed coming up basically all the way up to 16, just violence in the home every day between, well, really just my father attacking her. And this would be daily, every other day. It was not fun. And to see a perspective there wasn't even any drinking in the home. My father was not an alcoholic. He was not a drug addict. He was just mentally ill. And there was no drug use at all. We were athletes, if you will, in the home, right? We were, that's not what we did. And we avoided those things. But, you know, you read in the intro there that I talk about sports mental health. And
yeah.
I do this a lot. And I was raised as a gladiator, as I like to call it, playing football all the way up to college. And as many athletes know, that not just football, but all over, when that title or tag is removed from you, we're left with that who am I now idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I was raised in a war zone. And I played my fun in a war zone. I stayed in a state of hypervigilance all the time. I was raised in it, born in it, and had fun in it. So when all that was taken from me, I had to then, I only had a certain amount
of
skills.
Because of an injury, I read right in your bio, okay?
Yes, right. The injury took me out, but I only had a certain set of skills that had developed from the environments I came from. And so the more I continued to apply those skills, they wouldn't work. So like most people, I then had to build an environment around me that resembled where I came from so my skills would work. And so I could keep being violent, I could keep being angry, I could keep all of those real terrible character personalities and apply them in my life. Well, what works better than the dope business and the nightclub business?
Okay.
So that's where I went, and I went right into that. And I figured as long as there's money around, it doesn't matter how much cocaine you do. It doesn't matter how much trauma you inflict on other people. It doesn't matter, because that's what our society shows, right? Donald Trump's a perfect representative. We put an animal to run for the president of the United States, and he incites violence. We promote these things.
Yeah, okay.
So why not? And I now my skills worked. I got to be as deviant as ever, as violent as ever, and it only rewarded me even more. So rather than question any of my skills, because why? How could my skills or tools be wrong, Myrna? Because they helped me survive a traumatic experience twice, my entire childhood and the dope game. So I can't question my own skills.
And it rewarded you with money. Yeah.
Well, it rewarded me with money, friends, experiences, mood modulation.
Yep.
And I came out, so why would I dare question my tools? We don't do that. And so I call them in the book that I wrote, the Cognitive Rampage book, I call them our early life victories, that we develop skills in those environments for survival that we call early life victories. And then we get later in life wondering why they don't work, when if they worked at that extreme time, they have to work here and get me back skinny again.
Okay.
Right? We apply those things.
You can make the connection. But if you're mentally ill, you probably can't. But anyway,
that's
go
right.
ahead.
There it is. You got it, Myrna. So it's. I mean, that's where my life spoke to it, is until I was willing to get to that point to go, but we can't, because remember, if you're abused and you're traumatized as a kid or in a relationship, when that happens, one of the best defenses, immediate defenses that you have right then is simply to lie to yourself every day. I'm a good person. I'm happy. I'm awesome. I can do it. You just got to literally lie to yourself every day, you know, to try to survive it. That's what I did. As a kid, because I was just told I was everything terrible constantly, I had to reinforce that I wasn't. Otherwise, I'm going out on suicide, which I attempted 3 times as a teenager.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
You know, so you're going out that way. But until you can change that and go, you know, I'll speak this because I know there's a lot of people that listen to you that deal with trauma. And the way I had to face my trauma, and this is going to be hard to swallow for people listening, but I stuff down tough pills. It's what I do. So, you know, first, you know, how do we change and how do we get by things is about what we believe. And so if anyone, I watched my mother go through this and myself, if anyone has been through what they call trauma, then I need you to start there and go back to it and realize and question, was it trauma or is that just what happens in life? When we have irrational expectations of life, that life should be fair, people should treat me fairly, well, this leads to trauma. But if I ask any one of your listeners right now or off the cuff, is life fair? I don't think one of them would answer me, yes, they'd all say no.
No, life is not fair.
So then I'd ask anybody, why would we ever complain, whine, or call anything trauma?
Well, because life is not fair, but you don't have to live an abusive life. You don't have to live, you know, in the situation that you just told me that you grew up in. That is not the norm. So, I mean, life is not fair, but, you know, fairness can be as small as, okay, hey, you know, I fell in love and this boy dumped me, or you know, I wanted this promotion and I didn't get it. That's fairness, but I mean, you know, when we go to the extreme of being abused mentally, physically, or whatever, I mean, to me that is, I mean, we have to keep the belief that that is not right.
Right. I'm not questioning the belief that that's not right. But what I would urge people to question is the more we say that I've been through trauma, we reinforce this damage. I would ask, you know, there's trauma all over the world. We've all experienced it on some level. But I love this comparison, Myrna, and I think you will too. And I give it for everybody I listen to and use. You know, Myrna, if I'll even use you. If I had an A Myrna and I had a B Myrna, if A Myrna had made it to your level of happiness and success that you deem, but made it with a silver spoon, no adversity, no trauma, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Now the B Myrna has made it to the exact same place, but has been through all of the things you've been through, but been through trauma. It was not easy. I ask you, which do you respect more?
The one that's been through something. Yes, the survivor.
B.
Right, exactly.
So,
right.
So I would, I would urge you, Myrna, to be you.
Yeah.
Because the be you is you. You've been through all that. So the more we face that we've been through trauma and we tell the narrative story that we've been victimized, we will live that story. And you can ask anybody else, you know what, stand up right now on a microphone and tell me your story. If you see him take a big, deep breath, oh, I already know what kind of story it's going to be, and I know what kind of narrative you've been telling.
Yeah. Well, you know, as coaches, we do that all the time because everybody's got a story. And you're very right. I mean, we're talking about life here in the show. Everybody's got a story, and it's your reaction to that story. I mean, we can talk about Oprah. I quote her all the time. We can talk about, I mean, any of the major stars that you see are making millions of dollars in the sports arena. They've all come from something, you know, and it's how you respond to it. Sure, you make it beat you down for a little bit, but then you come back up. And you say, in spite of the trauma, in spite of the abuse, in spite that, you know, I lived in my car for 2 months or something like that, in spite of all that, I got up and I made it because I wanted to make it. I didn't let that beat me down. I didn't go to the corner and start begging for money or numb it with drugs or something, right? That's what we're talking
about,
right?
Myrna.
Addictions here.
Go off. Right. Go on that cognitive rampage, Myrna. Go off on that cognitive rampage. See how it incites you.
Is that what
But remember, what did you do there, right? Because a question a lot of people have is, how do I change?
Right.
And so remember what you did there. I'll open first by asking you, Myrna, is there truth?
Truth?
Is there truth?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to argue and say there's no truth. If you ride a roller coaster and you tell me it wasn't scary, I ride it and tell you it was scary.
Telling
the truth.
Right. Okay, all right. Well, yes, yeah. There's certain truths in the world. We're not going to go there because it's spiritual and whatever. But, Yeah,
but even
you're
then,
right. As
even
far
then,
as truths go mentally, your experience is going to be different from mine. Yes, true.
So
go ahead.
Truth
mm-hmm.
is perception. Truth is
right,
perception.
Right, exactly. Right. Mm-hmm.
So all you did was take the trauma, change the perception to tell a different story.
Right, right.
So
right.
what most people can't do, though, is challenge that perception. They can't challenge their perception of their trauma like I do. I'll challenge it by saying it wasn't trauma. You're defining it as a trauma. Why couldn't it be the catalyst that launched you into your life, and without that trauma, you'd have never made it?
Right, yes.
But see,
yes.
they can't. Why? Because people's truth is based in their experiences. And so for me to tell you that there isn't truth based on what you know you've experienced, well, you can't unexperience that. So this becomes the battle. So people look at what I'm saying as maybe wordplay, but it's not. When you have to play the words to change the belief, that's when it becomes difficult. People will grab onto that belief that I was victimized, I was traumatized, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Or were you
mm-hmm.
catalyst and pushed
yes.
and sparked
yes.
into the beautiful
yes.
thing you will become?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you should say that, but I just got a revelation. I opened my story by talking about, in my book, I wrote a book called Out of the Snares. And my story is that I was sexually abused when I was a child, and of course I grew up in poverty and all that. And I wrote my book, and I said that exactly what you're saying, that I didn't, you know, I came out of that, and I choose to take the positives from that experience because there's a lot of positives that came out of that experience. And one of my reviews said that I was taking a narcissistic view of it. She felt that my story defined the problems that I had later on in life or something like that. But, you know, like you, I took a different view, because being a victim, again, something that I write about, you can choose to be a victim in life or you can choose to be a player. And the way I talk about that is a victim is like what you're saying. You choose to believe that you experienced trauma. You choose to believe that the reason that you're not successful is because of what someone has done to you, and you hold on to that and you make that take you down and anchor you. Or you can choose to be a player and say, hey, you know what? Life has dealt me these cards, and how am I going to use these cards to elevate myself? So we're talking life here. Good discussion. Awesome. Anything you want to say on that, or do we want to talk now about chemical incarceration? We're talking about belief right now and how your belief can hold you in bondage, but how can drugs, and because I'm assuming that's what chemical incarceration is drugs. So you want to bridge into that?
Yeah, I would leave the last topic by simply telling people, you know, two things. Remember when I talked about in the beginning that we can become addicted to self-sabotage.
Mm-hmm.
We can become addicted to states like anxiety and depression. And it comes mm-hmm. from that because we're not willing to question our truth or question what you believe. And until you're willing to question the truth and the belief, nothing will change.
Okay.
And chemical incarceration, that is, I love that name.
yeah, it's unique.
I witnessed it. Yeah, exactly. The film, the trailer may be up now, but it's on IMDb now.
Okay.
But I spent my first 3 years was in a dual diagnosis facility, which is technically rehab. But dual diagnosis means that you have a mental illness diagnosis on top of substance abuse.
Hmm. Okay.
And these are your basic rehabs, really, your detox center rehabs. That's what they are. Now, where I worked were the ones that were funded by Medicaid and Medicare, not private, even though private's beginning to work this way, too. So the issue, oh, man, there's tons of issues I have. But what I noticed there was no one really offered any real help. All of my training, all of my school, all of my knowledge, none of it was being applied, in very small bursts because they had to, but it was mainly a 12-step program of abstinence and powerlessness. And then I would see them simply substitute a Schedule 1-2 illegal narcotic for a legal narcotic.
True. That's what they do with the heroin. Right.
That's what you do. And now, mind you, we could take the argument. They call it, harm reduction treatment. Okay, we can take this argument that giving people a Suboxone, for instance, that doesn't allow you to get high, that blocks those things and slows down withdrawal symptoms. We can argue that, and it slows down overdoses. Agreed. But it's not necessary. You don't die from heroin withdrawals. You get through it eventually, but then to just trade one for the other just seems like adding another step. So, yes, methadone can save lives, but it can also wreck them, kill them, and guess what? You're a client for life. And so for me, I was watching chemical incarceration, and people became addicted to the process, Myrna. It got to the reason, because the problem I have with addiction treatment in a lot of fields, is, especially psychology, is we all say, no, it's cognitive. No, it's behavioral. No, it's brain. No, it's this. It's all of them. It's all of us. It's behavioral. It's environmental. It's cognitive. It's biological. It's all of them. And my book is partly cognitively rampaging against all of those fields going, don't you all see it's everything? You can change people, places, and things, but if you don't change what you believe, nothing happens. If you don't change what you eat, what you do, all of this thing, all of this plays into it. And so all I would see people do that were coming to these treatment facilities, and mind you, there is no magic number about 30 days or 60 days. That's just an insurance quota. That's it. Mm-hmm. So they come there. They pull them into an unnatural environment, which you're just going to return home to the other environment, and that's why relapse is considered a part of addiction, which is not. Mm-hmm. So they chemically incarcerate them. One, from the street drugs, the way it's pushed, the way they're demonized, the way they're called addicts and bad people doing bad drugs, so they get no empathy, no help, no understanding, no love. They're chastised by their family. That's why I hate interventions. Interventions are terrible. They're bad. You collect all the people that you say they love you, circle them all up. They read to you and tell you how badly you treated them all, but then they say, this is how much we love you. Now go away from us for a while. It's confusing. So you mix them, you addict them to the chemicals, then you trade off the chemicals, so you have clients for life going to doctors, seeing people, then you convince them with the 12 steps that it's a brain disease and they're powerless, so they have to do this now for a lifetime. So you now have clients for life. And now let's work in the environmental behavioral aspect. Here's an issue. Let's say you've let your life get to a point and you're, on Medicare, you're on welfare, you don't have money. Things are bad, right? So you wind up in a detox facility on Medicare in 30 days. You really don't have much of a life to go out to. Well, here's the process of the Florida addiction treatment model. What my job as a therapist to do is also be your case manager. So I'm technically your personal secretary too. So before you discharge, I have to find the doctor where you're going that's going to give you the medications that you weren't taking when you got in here. You may wind up with a mental health diagnosis that's not correct, because you can't diagnose anyone with a mental health diagnosis when substances are involved. You have to be flatline and baseline first before you can diagnose mental health, which never happens. Because insurance will not allow you to treat them unless they have a diagnosis. So if you show up, I got to give you a supposed mental health diagnosis in order to treat you for substances.
Okay.
It's terrible. And so now imagine, we don't have much of a life to go to. And now what I can do on Medicare and this thing is, you are in charge, or if I'm the addict now, or if I'm the patient, sorry, and I go to my therapist, I say, hey, I'm in Florida now, but I've always wanted to go to Savannah. Well, as a therapist, I have to find them sober living in Savannah, find them a doctor to give them prescriptions, basically enable them completely. And now we then pay for the plane ticket or the bus ride to go there. So then they get a free ride to Savannah. Then you go hang out. Now it's sober living. Granted, it's not the best situations, but it's that or under a bridge.
Right.
So that's why a lot of these facilities are terrible. They're gross and full of diseases. And so you go in another outpatient for 4 to 6 weeks. Let's say you relapse because you're hanging out with everybody and outpatient living in sober housing. You're bound to relapse in that environment. And then you just commit yourself again to Savannah, do 30 days. And now I've always wanted to go to California. They fly me to California.
All right, so you're not painting a very rosy picture. Are you saying that this goes on forever? Or what's the solution?
Yes, this is why I say they become addicted to the process. Why would I want to quit that job? So I can go dig holes? Nothing against labor, because that's great for you, but right. You know what I mean? What life do I have to give up? Otherwise, I get to travel the country, meet a bunch of new people, and stick to my narrative of my victimization, and I have a brain disease.
Wow. Well, this is interesting.
Why? Right, well, why would anyone?
All right, I understand totally what you're saying now about the chemical incarceration. And, yeah, it definitely happens. We know all kinds of prescription drugs that you get addicted to. So you're right, it's not the bad drugs anymore. It's there's a new thing that's going on with the painkillers and all that. But, all right, let's take another quick station break, and we'll be right back with our final segment with Adam Lowry. Okay, thank you. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Mindset Transformations with Coach Myrna. We are speaking today to Adam Lowry, and we have this incredible revealing discussion regarding chemical addictions and the process of chemical incarcerations. Now, as we are running out of time and as we wrap up our show, in closing, Adam, can you give us a little bit of your cognitive rampage and you know, leave our audience with something that they can do to get them to believe a new narrative and to take control of their lives?
Man, if I could write that book, then I would have wrote it and I'd be a multimillionaire. And
really?
There would be no more books about how to change your life. And,
okay,
you know,
okay.
I would tell people that if any one way was the way, there would only be one book, really. And I like to talk about the real source, but I won't go there. So the idea that change is optimal for everybody, and it's what fits you. And the hardest thing that we can do when we're sitting there is, A, let go of what we believe to be our truth, and C, also to let go of the realities and the ideas. And to let go of what is supposed to be, because nothing is supposed to be, nothing. And until we're willing to question what it's supposed to be, what we were supposed to be, where we were supposed to go, how we're supposed to feel, none of that. That you decide your perception. You control the dialogue. You shape the thoughts that control how you feel. Remember, stop saying it's just how you feel, because every way that you feel is created by what you think. If you want to change what you feel, immediately change what you think. If you want to change what you think, you have to be humble enough to change what you believe. When you can challenge yourself, then you can challenge the world, and you can live in that cognitive rampage. There is no stopping that whatsoever.
Wow, I feel your passion. That is awesome. You know, it fits right in to what I was going to leave the guests with. But, all right. So that I love your passion. I love what you're talking about as far as thinking and thoughts and things like that. So, what I want to leave the guests with is something similar. When I know that you were going to be coming on the show, I researched a topic, and this is what I found. I found that, you know, talking about what you're talking about, beliefs and trauma and life experiences, what it leaves you feeling is worthlessness. And when you feel worthless, then you self-medicate in order to feel better. You drink something, you smoke something, you eat something, you buy something, and you're trying to numb the pain. So, and when you try to stop the addictive behaviors, cold turkey, you experience all kind of withdrawal symptoms that makes you feel worse, right? So the better way to handle the addiction is to reach for a better thought. Now, it takes practice because it's like a muscle that you have to practice to build, right? So let's say that you're depressed about something, right? You move up the emotional scale by, you know, maybe going to blame or maybe going to anger or something along those lines to make you feel better. And just like Adam said a minute ago, all you need to do is get a better thought. You know, we have fear and depression being bottom feeders. And even though we might say that anger and blame and disappointment and all those things are bad, they're better thoughts, and they pull you out of it. And I have actually tried that myself, you know, just a couple of days ago. I was angry.
Yeah.
And I reached for a better thought, and I reached for the thought of blame, right? And my anger immediately dissipated. So that is, right. You know, that's a good thing. Yeah, change the narrative. I love that, Adam. If there's anything that we're going to be taking from this show, is change the narrative and stop popping something to help you feel better.
That's it.
Did I do
that's
good?
It. That's it. You're rampaging. That's it, Myrna. That the dialogue is it in the thoughts. But most of us just hold on to our thoughts and go, I don't want to change it because I think I'm supposed to feel this way. And so you perpetuate your own feeling. And it's very hard to let go of that. No one makes you mad. No one makes you angry, and no one makes you sad. No one even makes you happy. They do something, and then you have a perception that creates thoughts based on that behavior that shapes your own feeling.
Oh, my gosh, that is so true. That is so true. Oh, my goodness.
But remember, yeah. It's much easier to blame everyone else other than yourself because inevitably, as long as we can be wrong about it, as long as we can lose everything, but at least say we're right, we still win something.
Yeah. And you know, you never get help because, you know, like I said, I chose blame, but you can't stay there. You know, you got to move up. Awesome. All right. So how can the audience get in touch with you, Adam?
My website is adamlowry.com, Lowery, or cognitiverampage.com. My podcast is on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud. We're all over the place. You can find it on YouTube as well. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. Send me a message on Facebook. I'll reach out. I always get back to everybody, but give me about 48 to 72 hours. I'll get back to you. You can find me all those ways. I'm always speaking. I do groups here locally in Orlando. I'm launching a new venture, which I think you might like, Myrna, on June 18th. We are launching the Dollar Mental Health Club.
Okay.
Yeah,
that means
so that'll
you get a dollar and you get help?
That's it.
Well, that's great. All right. And tell us more about this. I mean, how do people sign up or get involved in that?
That's all on my website. If you're local in Orlando, June 18th, we'll be at the Fusion XL Performance Facility over in Ocoee doing a big workshop with about 10 speakers doing some fun stuff. But we launch it that day. It's on the website under mental training. You can find it there.
All right. Well, you know, I just came back from Orlando last week. You know, maybe I'll take another drive up and see what you're all about. That's awesome.
Come on up, Myrna. I tell you what. Would you like to speak?
What was that?
Would you like to speak at the event?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, we can talk about that. You know, I'm trying to grow my speaking career. So that would be awesome.
Go.
See how it works, listeners? Yeah, that, you know, you need people to move ahead in this world, and that's awesome. All right, Adam, it has been fun. It's been a blast. I'm pretty sure that, you know, our conversation was about life and about, you know, transitioning into a better life of abundance, regardless of where you are right now. You know, it can get better. And Adam has proven by his story that it can happen. So until next time, tune in, you know, next week at the same time for Mindset Transformations with Coach Myrna. And Adam, you have yourself a blessed day, and thank you.
Thank you, Myrna.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.